Spiegel and Holmes, afternoons on the Score.
I'm on the phone last night with Kevin Byard. He said we could feel the electric energy emanating from the tunnels at Soldier Field and just how special that felt before they, during pregame warmups, before they went out. And he gave me the quote of the week, and I'll share it with you guys. I don't know if he said it in his press conference, but he said, we have to play to the edge, but just don't jump off the cliff. Like, controlled aggression. So I'm going to use the hell out of that clip. I got goosebumps, and I, you know, play to the edge, don't jump off the cliff. Controlled aggression. And he told me that, you know, we know how much this means to us as a team. We know how much it means in terms of the division, but we mostly know how much this means to the city of Chicago. So make no mistake, if you're listening and you're Bears fans, these guys know how you feel, and they want it as much as you do.
Spiegel and Holmes, afternoons on the Score.
Rooftop, like we bring in 88 back. It's the Spiegel and Holmes show. We've got you until Bulls basketball tonight.
17-19.
They had a nice little, you know, run.
I know. They got back to 500.
But this is.
I know, Lawrence.
This is what they do.
I know. A friend of mine was at their game in Boston. Said, yeah, those Bulls, they battled pretty hard for not having a star.
Oh.
I was like, that's pretty good scouting by you.
Modest had some star moments.
I know. It's what I said. Modest had star moments, and he's got possibilities. And they're like, okay. Well, Jaylen Brown didn't shoot well, and the Celtics still beat him good.
They sure did.
Yeah.
That's not fun.
That's not anything that we need to focus on right now.
From Chicago, number 14, Matisse Bouzelis.
Oh, that's close.
Oh.
That is. That I love his. Even, I love not, his paintings. I really do.
It's not even close to how it's spelled.
The guy was just at the Art Institute. Or is that in Boston? He's at the Museum of Fine Arts there in Boston.
That's
Matisse Bouzelis.
Yeah.
All right.
Magritte Giddey is the point guard on this team. Magritte and Matisse.
That's all right. And whatever.
Onward.
Let's talk about this game from an emotional calibration standpoint. Now, ordinarily.
Yes.
When we talk about this sort of thing, we are talking about the fan base. We're talking about how Bears fans happen to deal with this, how they're going to get themselves mentally and emotionally prepared for it. How difficult is it going to be for people to deal with their Packer fan in-laws or wives or husbands or
neighbors?
Or neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I was,
shout out to all you Janets out there.
I was joking on House of L about this last night, that what I find to be really interesting about how all of this stuff has played out with a rivalry thing is that you have to remember there's a generation in between us and the people that have had their Bears awakening now that flipped. There are a bunch of Chicagoland people that were like, you know what? I think I'm going to be a Packers fan. That's why there are these pockets. Like, whether we're talking about in Rockford or Elgin or in Kenosha, like, there's these pockets of people because...
Isn't that what Brian Bulaga talked about?
Yes.
That his dad stopped being a Bears fan because they fired Ditka. And then it begat a whole family full of Packers fans.
Yep. And I think that story is more prevalent than one would imagine.
I think you're right.
And so that there's that part of this whole thing. So we usually talk about this from the standpoint of the fans that are involved in the rivalry. But I think that we have two examples. And like Stacey was saying with what Kevin Byard said, the Bears are still trying to find the proper emotional calibration for this game.
Help me remember this, Tanny, because you listen to everything, and I mean everything. Cole Kmet, the first time they played the Packers, said, we're not, like, we don't want to get too high. Do I have that right? If you're going to play stuff, great, but I just know that you know the storyline here in terms of the up and the down and the up and the down.
Well, yeah, this is mostly about, you know, how geared up they were for the last meeting they had,
okay,
you know, a couple weeks ago.
Because that's what I'm remembering. Because going into that game, he said that they were too amped the first time, right? And then they played kind of flat in that first half because they were too amped. And so the second time, they wanted to be a little bit more level. But the truth is, they sucked in both of those first halves. That's what makes this a little confusing.
And they were not more level in that second game. And I think that, to Stacey's point, what she was talking about, the energy, I think when you get in that Soldier Field and that energy kind of takes over, you kind of lose whatever discipline you thought you had about how you wanted to play football.
Right, but sometimes like it's a narrative arc, like, oh, we played man in the first game, then we played zone, and now we got to do this. Like, oh, we were too amped, then we were unamped, now we got to be level. They sucked in both games, so it's hard to know exactly what they should do.
Yes, it's so interesting to talk to a guy like Matt Forte that kind of always had hit the right note with
man.
Like fury underneath, but he wasn't going to go outside of himself in a game and be an emotional, like, deterrent to you winning. And I think Tanny's spot on. You look at what happened at the beginning of the second game between teams.
Oh, boy.
It was like they didn't get the message. And look, you, Speeds, I think
DeMarco Jackson was, crowd surfing on the opening kickoff.
He was swag surfing.
You said you were crowd surfing at home doing laundry?
Yeah, that was after the game, though, not as the game kicked off.
But I think we all jumped on a pile. In that first 2 minutes of that game, every single one of us jumped on a pile.
So you were there.
Yeah.
You were at the emotional amplifier of this.
Thoroughly out of control.
Walk me through what it felt like for you. And if we should give the Bears a little bit of grace, because the fans themselves, the city was on fire.
Oh, yeah, the city was
that
on fire.
The whole day.
The whole day and the whole atmosphere there. And Jen, just everybody getting revved up like crazy. And the coaches talked about it too. But you could feel that kind of like that excitement, but violent. I keep using the word crackling. I bet people are tired of me using crackling, but that's just the way that it felt. That, like, everybody was inside the Jiffy Pop as it was getting more and more towards the top, and that thing was going to blow. And on that kickoff with DeMarco jumping on the top, and then what? Three different penalties on the Bears' first defensive possession, including one that was soft from Booker, I thought the call was. But yeah, it was definitely out of control, but nobody in the crowd was upset that the Bears were out of control. We all thought that it was the refs holding us back, that we had a right to that kind of violence, and we were entertained.
The violence part of it is something that you want. You want to see the team be ready for the moment, but not end up hurting themselves by getting penalties and extra yardage. How many penalties did they end up with? Was it over 100 yards in that game?
Giant pile.
I believe the crew that's on the game this weekend is known for penalties, I believe.
They are. I think it's more than 3.29 is the number for this crew, which only worked 11 games. Like, they've worked the fewest number of games of anybody.
Hey, congrats, Bears. You get one less day of rest, and you get an inexperienced crew.
Inexperienced crew.
Welcome to prime time.
That's flag happy. You don't like that, do you, Baby T? We'll talk about it on the next episode of our show.
That's
Baby,
right.
T's back there.
Baby T's in show. The Bulls zone.
We already took the promo shot.
But what you want, though, is you want that Ravens-Steelers energy.
Yes.
Like, when they play,
yes. That
is controlled aggression.
That's what it felt like. Ravens-Steelers energy, or in the Kaepernick-Russell Wilson days, Legion of Boom, Fangio, San Francisco-Seattle energy. Man, what it felt like.
I mean, that was definitely some energy.
Yay!
10 penalties for 105 yards, by the way.
Yeah,
it's too many.
It was a lot of, they did a lot of bad stuff in that game. And you're just like, okay, how do you, to be fair, it's a tough thing to figure out. Like, everything. That's why I asked Matt about it, because not everyone is equipped for it. People tell you what they think it is. But remember, there aren't a lot of people on this Bears team that know what it is. The Bears have been playing a lot of crap games for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And even Cole Kmet and Jalen Johnson, those guys have been playing in a lot of crap games. Games where the only thing that they're playing for is like a nebulous pride thing. Where they were playing for the division in that game.
Right, right, right.
And now they're playing to move on in the playoffs.
Yeah, these are big deals.
And these are human beings. Mm-hmm. They are people. And so you have to figure out how to get to the right place where you aren't hurting yourself.
And Cole Kmet can speak to all of this, including his youth as a pure fan. He was on with our guys, Take the North, live right here between 6 and 8 last night. Here's Kmet on, should we start with the emotions in the playoffs, Tanny, or you want to go to that first one on the post-Packers game vibes? Let's do that. Here we are.
Ben had alluded to it last time before we played these guys, and look, there's no question that we really want to win this game, and they really want to win this game. And sometimes that's, you know, the want to win is good enough, and that works like in high school and maybe in some college games. In the NFL, everyone wants to win and wants to win these games badly. And what it comes down to is those kind of those coach speak things, but the basic fundamentals and doing the details right, communicating effectively. Those are the things that are going to win out. And so we got to go out there at the end of the day and go execute this plan to the fullest. And I think if we do that, we'll like the result that we have. I mean, I didn't sleep for like 2 days, and that's no joke. I remember being exhausted on like Tuesday or Wednesday still just from that game, just because there's so much emotion put into that. And then obviously to have the ending that we did, it just kind of adds to that as well. And going into overtime. So, and this late in the year, it was definitely a lot emotionally for sure. But, you know, it was no doubt a fun game to be part of, and a game for the first, you know, call it 57, 58 minutes that we would like to be better and like it to go differently. But, you know, look, the ball bounced our way a few times later in that game, and we were able to take advantage of it. And, you know, that was good to see us kind of close that game out the way we did. But we know that if we want to have a good result here this Saturday, we're going to have to come out much faster and you know, get to what we need to be doing earlier in the game.
So what does that look like if they come out faster and they get to what they need to be doing earlier in the game? How does that resonate?
I hope it means that they're playing a cleaner game, that they're in a space where everyone knows their assignment so that they can play faster, that we aren't seeing six mistakes in the first 11 snaps or whatever it was.
And we're also not seeing the chaos that led to all those penalties.
Uh-huh.
So you're splitting the difference.
So there's another point of view on this that we should share.
Because what Kurt Warner speaks to in this is something that I think did happen in that Saturday night game.
So Kurt Warner talked to us on Monday about the playoffs and how, because we hear it all the time from guys that played and people with microphones, it's different, it's faster, it's all of these things. I thought Kurt gave a really good explanation of what it feels like and where the advantages might be inside of this game.
Again, it's, you know, a lot of people talk about you know, the pace of things and everything, you know, being faster. And I don't know if that's possible. I mean, that would just be saying, oh, guys don't play as hard and as fast in the regular season as they, you know, they just decide to play a little bit faster, you know, in the playoffs. Like, I don't think that's the case. I think what makes it feel faster and better is, you know, the fact that you understand the stakes, you understand the ramifications of every play. And, you know, one play that costs you a regular season game is different than one play that knocks you out of the playoffs and sends you home. You know, so I think you understand that. I think the other part of it, too, is that you're playing against really good teams every week. So it's not as if, okay, we're playing against a bad team and then we're playing against an average team. And then we got a good team and then we got an average team again. You know, like everybody's good. And so every play and every game is so vital, and you just have to be a little bit better. You got to be a little bit more buttoned up, and you got to make the plays that are there, and you can't let them make, you know, the plays on the other side. And so that to me is really the biggest difference. And then when you talk about pressure, you know, the one thing to me about, you know, playoff time and when it comes to pressure is I think there's so much to not letting one play lead into another play that leads into another play. And so, you know, in the regular season, again, you know, there's going to be another shot. There's going to be another game. There's going to be like every game doesn't mean as much when you're in those big moments and you make a mistake. You know, it's so easy to go, oh my gosh, you know, if I make another mistake, we're going to go home and we're not going to get another shot. And so you allow one play to lead into another play to lead into another play. And that's what oftentimes can sink people. You know, I played in three Super Bowls, and You know, my first Super Bowl, we were up 16-0, and then we were tied 16-16. In my second Super Bowl, we were down 17-3, I think, and we came back and tied it at 17-17. And then in my last Super Bowl, we were down 10 at the half, and we came back and took the lead with 2.5 minutes to go. So all that to say, there's ebbs and flows in these big games, just like every other game. But if you start to panic when something goes against you early, that's usually when the blowouts happen. That's usually when the good teams take advantage of it. So you really have to allow, you know, when we talk about the pressure, is you can't let that part of the pressure get to you, thinking, oh, shoot, that one play just cost us this playoff game. You got to ride the wave, and you got to get back in line, and you got to, you know, one snap and clear, let that play go and get to the next one, because things can change, and, you know, momentum shifts in these big games just as much as they do in any regular season game.
Man, thought that was great stuff, and I got to say, I thought the Bears let that momentum build and build and build against themselves.
It turned into anxiety.
Oh, it absolutely turned into anxiety.
And, that's okay.
I know, but in the stands, Lawrence, it turned into depression. It turned into fear that, oh my God, was our whole season a lie? Literally, like, thoughts like that popped into your head. You're like, if we can't beat Malik Willis, then what are we doing? Is this whole thing just a fluky sham?
Hey, man.
And then they pulled it out.
That's why it could happen again. Like, those feelings could resonate inside of Soldier Field again if things don't kind of click.
You think the fan base is susceptible to those kind of feelings?
Yeah,
is the team susceptible to those kind of feelings? Are we a fluky sham that's not ready to compete just yet?
I don't,
you shouldn't.
I don't think so, but they don't, most of the players don't have the legacy of that weighing on them like fans do. Fans are thinking about things that happened 15 years ago.
Grandpa told me this was going to happen.
25 years ago. There's still people talking about Charles Martin and Jim McMahon.
You weren't there. I was.
Like, there's a lot of things that fans harbor that players have no idea about.
How many of these guys know who Chris Conte is? How many of these Bears even know who that is? We got a text yesterday. I still hate Chris Conte, to your point. Yeah. So.
And Charles Martin, I never say anything other than rest his soul. But may he rot and burn in hell. Period. New paragraph.
That's different than rest
those
his soul.
Those are divergent thoughts.
I never say. That being said, may he rot and burn in hell.
Those are totally divergent thoughts.
No, look, you're right, but it sure felt like the team didn't believe in itself, as the crowd was there not believing in the team.
And remember, in both games, they had opportunities early to get rid of that feeling. The fourth down call, they go down 10 plays, 70 yards. And C.J. Gardner-Johnson's interception on the second possession at Lambeau Field, where they got down to the 36 and got 0 points.
That was the moment. The Manungai play the moment when the anxiety in the building was like, our coach just do the thing that people were worried that he might do, get a little too cute?
Literally before that moment, it felt like all 60,000 of us were going to join together as a giant Voltron and climb over the stadium walls and march up the lakefront.
With the goalpost?
Yeah, absolutely. With the goalpost is like a little baby pitchfork in our hands because we're so gigantic. That's what it felt like at the beginning of that game. And then after the Manungai, the snap over his head on fourth down, it's like brrr, all the air came out of the damn balloon, and we all just sat there for 60 minutes.
But hey, then Caleb and the boys rose to the occasion.
They did.
And they said, all right, let's go. And let's try and make some plays.
And Romeo Doubs was fearful.
Is on tape around the entire NFL.
Put that man on the hands team again.
This is not how you field an onside kick. You don't back up.
I'm afraid.
I'm going to go for it.
Too late. They hit me in the head.
Yeah, it wasn't good at all.
All right, so what's our lesson in terms of emotional calibration? Be up, but not too up.
It's something for Bears fans to watch for in the beginning of the game.
Yeah.
That's my takeaway from this. Like, you've heard the players speak about it now. This is the third time
that
they've spoken about it. Let's see how they do Let's see if they can harness the energy
right
into something super positive and not let it overwhelm them.
So do you remember who opened up for emotional calibration that night at the Elbow Room?
Who's that?
Fluky Sham. Those guys were great.
I thought it was Fluky Stokes.
No, it was Fluky Sham and Emotional Calibration, back to back. It's a hell of a show.
Can I ask you a question?
Lori Lightfoot was on trumpet. True story, I saw Lori Lightfoot play trumpet. I didn't know it, but I know that she played trumpet in a band at the Elbow Room.
Really?
In the 90s. Oh, yeah.
She'll probably be at the game.
Sunday nights.
Who's doing the anthem? Because you talk about emotional amplification. Who's doing? Because are you doing the anthem?
Not that I'm aware of. But the day's young.
Does this feel like a break glass, here's Jim Cornelison type of game?
Well, who did it last time? Do you remember? Like, there's nothing wrong with if they won the last game, let's run it back.
I don't remember.
I remember the Leo High School vocal group.
They're great.
Phenomenal. They did halftime. And I remember thinking, man, we're just so down. We're not giving you the love that you deserve right now because we were down. I don't remember if they did the anthem or not.
Didn't they? Weren't they like a finalist on
every year? On whatever it is, America's Got Talent,
yeah,
something like that. They're unbelievable.
They're so good.
Yeah, I saw them at Wrigley one time as well, and happened to see them in their bus leaving Wrigley, and we were just like, you guys are great.
It was awesome. Uniting Voices, the Chicago Children's Choir,
okay,
who did it on December 20th.
Bring it back.
Who's got a bona fide winning pedigree in the playoffs? John Vincent.
Ooh, let's go.
Our guy.
Let's go.
I love that idea.
Let's go.
I really love that
idea. Oh, I'd love it if John Vincent sang the anthem. Oh, that would be, that's the idea, Tanny. That's why you're great at this.